You're listening to the Illustration Hour podcast, an interview podcast where I talk to illustrators, art directors, and agents about the craft and business of illustration. My name is Julia Dufossé, and I'm an editorial and commercial illustrator based in Chicago. And I'm chatting with creatives within the world of illustration to learn about their process, the challenges they faced along the way, and how to succeed as an illustrator today. Hello, and welcome back to the Illustration Hour. I'm your host, Julia Dufossé. I'm really excited to bring you a lovely interview today. But before we get to that, I've got a wonderful announcement. We've been working on the Illustration Hour website, and we just published a nice handy collection of resources, including books recommended by past guests, tools, and tons of free learning resources. You can find that whole library of resources at illustrationhour.com/resources. So please check it out. It helps me continue making the show, and I hope it will be useful and helpful to you. Okay, so on the actual show today, I'm talking with two wonderful creatives, Melissa Deckert and Nicole Licht. You can find them on Instagram at partyofone. And on their website, which is partyofone.studio. Melissa and Nicole met while working on the design team at Etsy. After deciding to go freelance, they started collaborating on personal and professional projects, and they enjoyed working together so much that they decided to launch a studio together called Party of One. Together, they now take on exciting visual campaigns for clients like Mercedes-Benz, Otherland, Eater, and Airbnb. They also regularly contribute photo illustrations to publications like the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Time Out. What is a photo illustration, you might ask? Well, Melissa and Nicole specialize in creating these intricate visual scenes out of props, materials, and texture. It's hard to explain what without referencing one of their illustrations, but they usually make these large scenes in their studio in Brooklyn. Then they photograph them, paying particular attention to the lighting and composition, and then they proceed to manipulate the image in Photoshop in post-production. So you really need to see the results to understand it. So go check their work out on partyofone.studio and on their Instagram. It's amazing work. Nicole and Melissa's process actually has many similarities with a traditional illustrator's process. We delved into how Melissa and Nicole tackle editorial assignments and create their striking illustrations. I learned a lot talking with Nicole and Melissa, from how they think about concepts to how they work together, and also how they think about texture and materials. It was inspiring to hear from two designers who are doing work that transcends traditional definitions of design and illustration. And they really helped me by reminding me of something crucial, and that is to not always focus on results and outcomes and to enjoy the process, to playfully explore, and as Nicole stated wisely, to focus more on making cathartic art. And if you listen to this episode, she'll explain exactly what that means. So I think you could tell already, but I absolutely loved talking with Melissa and Nicole and learning about Party of One. So without further ado, please enjoy this conversation with Nicole and Melissa of Party of One Studio. Hi, Melissa and Nicole. I'm really, really happy to get this opportunity to talk with you today.
Hi, Julia. Thanks for having us.
Yes. Thanks so much. We're so happy to be with you.
Yeah. It's really cool to talk to people who are not traditional illustrators, but who do stuff that's so, it's definitely related to illustration. And I don't know, do you guys describe yourself as
as making illustrations usually.
I think in a roundabout way, we've sort of ended up there, but sometimes we even surprise ourselves by our descriptions of what we do. I think it kind of changes based on whoever we're talking to sometimes.
Yeah, we definitely have, we definitely fall probably more under the umbrella of designers, but individually we have our own leanings that push us into different realms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's have like, okay, so both of you separately tell me like a little bit about yourself, like what makes you, what part you play in this, really?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I studied graphic design, so I feel like I kind of naturally transitioned directly into a graphic design role, especially when I met Nicole, which we were working together in-house at Etsy. So I feel like a lot of my learnings in more of a workplace setting were design related. So bringing that into Party of One, I mean, is really just kind of how I think. It's and how we both think.
And so Melissa, you went to school, right? For graphic design too. Yeah.
Yeah. I went to Pratt and, you know, studied Comd there. And I kind of bounced around also between illustration, fine art and design. I switched my major many times.
Okay.
But ultimately ended up, loving the design process. So I've had a little bit more of a linear path in that sense. Mm-hmm. But I think in working together with Party of One, what sort of drew us together was that we both love working with a lot of different materials and love making things in kind of non-traditional ways, even though we tend to operate and think and present our work in kind of more of a design perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for myself, I studied fine art at Cooper Union, mm-hmm. and I definitely spent a lot of time on a weaving path. But I would say I started out doing paintings, installation work. I definitely have a sculptural bend to my work. And when I started working as a designer, there was like kind of a learning curve for me, a different way of thinking and expressing concepts. I think with the work that we do at Party of One, I bring more of the art side back into it, just leaving a little bit more room, and definitely am drawn to illustration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you both have like kind of like an interesting, diverse kind of background, but you both had a job as designers really at Etsy. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, definitely. I joined Etsy kind of early on. I think there were only about 100 employees then. Mm. And I was there when the design team was formed. When I first was hired, that wasn't the case. And it was such a it was coming at design, I think, in a little bit of a different way, just because so much of it was just really in support and sort of mirroring back the ethos of the brand itself. And I specifically on the team sort of fell into that bucket where I used a lot of crafting techniques early on in my work there in a design format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we're really open to bringing in people that sort of represented also the sellers and the way of thinking of the sellers. So it wasn't a traditional design team to begin with, I think.
But it grew, yeah, it grew into that. Yeah. Yeah, it grew into a global design team, actually, mm-hmm. before we left, where half of our team was based in Berlin and we were rolling out multi-language campaigns across all different sorts of platforms.
Yeah, but everyone had incredibly diverse, initially, I think, backgrounds and interests. So that really added to the flavor of coming up with ideas and executions and things. I think people really understood the materials that Etsy sellers were working with. And so it kind of brought a little bit more diverse creativity in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely a place for Melissa and I to bond on handcrafted design, hand-built photograph mm-hmm. design.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. that was the first thing when I saw the work of the team when I was applying for jobs initially. I was pretty straight out of college. I had an internship before. I was like working on all this weird Mercedes-Benz stuff, which is funny now because they have become a client. but I was photoshopping like license plates at this agency and it sucked. one of the people that I had interned for when I was in college, her name was Alana Dweck. She had a stationary design wedding company, and she made mm-hmm. this beautiful work that was really tactile, and I had worked with her for a summer, and she started working at Etsy as a project manager, And so she told me about an opening there, which I think was kind of the first wave of bringing in people to help build out the design team. Yeah. It existed in Berlin. I think there was only one person in Berlin at the time.
Yeah.
Anda.
Hi, Anda. Yeah. Hi, Anda.
and then what, 4 or 5 people on the Brooklyn team?
I mean, if even.
Yeah. And so I was.
And were you hiring mostly like very traditional designers, or were you looking for sort of a broad, like people who might do design but are not designers or not trained traditional?
We had a very traditional designer and creative director already. I was definitely on the hand-built side, and I think Melissa was brought on to sort of bridge the gap. I mean, I say that now in retrospect. I don't know if it was such a conscious choice at the time, but we definitely wanted to find people who really understood the brand. And yeah, Melissa had some really beautiful tactile type work in her portfolio. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that helps sway things a little bit, because I was, I studied traditional design and I was coming in at it from that perspective, but I definitely always took a more tactile, I think, hand-built approach to a lot of my work. So yeah, I think that kind of appeased both sides and hopefully, you know, was the thing that got me in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So Nicole, is it true that you were responsible for hiring
Melissa? I definitely advocated. I mean, Alana brought Melissa in and I pushed. I really fell in love with her work, and she had such a nice, calm demeanor walking in. And it, you know, it really was kind of the wild days. So it was, she felt like she would be a great addition and staying steady. I mean, I think at that time, right, so we were just sort of scrambling to meet whatever needs might just be coming. You know, all of our clients were internal, right? But so many teams and so many people were used to wearing different hats. So there were a lot of other people who were sort of like creating their own things, and we were trying to just sort of bucket it all out. And I just felt, yeah, for sure that Melissa would be, and she really was, just such a nice, calm, wonderful person to work with across all the teams, and definitely all of her very thoughtful and detailed process was super appreciated.
Thanks, Nicole.
Yeah.
This is sweet.
But yeah. It's definitely a weird kind of learning bridge for me starting out there, because I hadn't really had a lot of experience working with a small in-house team, and I was super, super green,
yeah,
I think, in a lot of different ways. So I'm sure, you know, I probably annoyed plenty of people with not understanding how a big company worked or how the process worked in terms of, you know, getting feedback for things or moving at a certain pace.
Yeah.
So I feel like it took me maybe 4 to 6 months to like get my flow there and really step into what I was doing in a better way, which I think, you know, I'm going to give myself a break. I think that's normal on your like first main job, but I do remember that phase distinctly. So it's fun being here now, because it's so, like, our relationship has changed so much.
Yeah.
We really were, along with Alana, I think, two people that were, like, helping me steady myself at that phase in my life.
Wow. I mean,
you know, starting out there.
Yeah. I mean, so I think
you showed me the ropes.
Yeah. I think that, I don't know if I showed them correctly, because the truth of it is that that was also my first design job. I mean, I happened to be, it was a lot of happenstance led me to that spot. So, I had definitely had a lot of experience at Etsy and working in other realms. But I think, you know, we were all just sort of figuring out how this was going to work in real time.
Yeah, yeah. And so when I think of Etsy now, I definitely think of like kind of like a Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
But I guess at the time it must have been very different. I mean, you guys were still working out of the headquarters in San Francisco, but you were not?
Oh, no. We were there. We had an office in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. The San Fran office
headquarters
is fairly new.
Still, yeah, yeah.
All right. So, yeah. So, it wasn't at all like a Silicon Valley thing.
But it was in a funny way. I do have to say, they're definitely... we had a different leader then. Rob Kalin was still there, and it definitely had that feeling. We had ping pong tables. We grew to have kombucha on tap. There definitely was that, but it was a scrappier version in the beginning, for sure. And yeah, it was just, it was wild. I don't want to pretend it wasn't. I mean, there are a lot of really capable and amazing people there, but there was definitely like a anything could happen vibe, which does feel in a way like a Silicon Valley experience. I believe just because it was just full of young people, long hours. Well, I was not as young, but lots of high fives and and lots of parties. I mean, every company event was a celebration.
Yeah, but it was just it's crappy Brooklyn version of a tech company.
Of a tech company.
Yeah.
But it grew. It definitely grew and evolved and
were there, I think, like 800 people, I want to say, were hired. While I was there, you saw even more growth, I think.
Yeah.
But it really transformed into a huge company. And even, you know, just the size of it had to change. They moved offices or kept adding offices and then moved into the current location, which is still in Dumbo in Brooklyn, the main headquarters.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But there are... Yeah, kind of small offices all around the world, and it really, grew to be a large tech company for sure.
Yes. So, how did you guys first get an inkling that you both could work together outside of, I guess, Etsy?
I think, we had a really nice opportunity to sort of spearhead a campaign that was directly. Pointed at sellers and it was for a holiday. And I mean, for me, I think when we would show up on the weekends in a snowstorm to make sure it got done, I was like, yes, this is a good pairing. We definitely had a shared a similar, for good or for bad, similar work ethic and attention to detail and a real personal desire to make sure that whatever we were tasked with really was, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think I always realized was that when we were part of the design team and everyone was concepting and coming up with ideas for campaigns or for events or whatever it was, we were always the two people that rather than wanting to hire someone to make it, we were like, oh, can you let us do it, please? Like, we really want to be the ones to make it also.
Yeah.
So I think it wasn't so much that, you know, we were the only ones in the trenches, but we always looked for these extra opportunities to be involved in the kind of tactile or the making aspect of campaigns and bigger projects, which wasn't really, I guess, the traditional job of a designer. Usually you're concepting it and you're overseeing it.
Is that you're less excited about executing somehow sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. I think for a lot of people, they just want to do the idea. And that's
especially
great.
When you get more senior, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we were really kind of, I think, stuck in the middle of it where we loved coming up with the concepts and the ideas, but we also wanted to have a say in how it was made. And we had a lot of ideas from both of our backgrounds in terms of how to get that done. So there was like a really nice period where Etsy still wasn't so big that everything had to be really utilitarian and able to be translated in a bunch of languages. And so I feel like for like a couple years, there was a period that we did have the capacity to make things at a scale where the two of us could maybe hire someone else, but could be working for a week on something that normally they would hire out.
Yeah.
And, you know, it probably saved the company money. It helped us explore. I think it gave us a chance.
It caused some stress too. I definitely would look for extensions of projects and keep it going.
Yeah.
Remember, never forget Vine. Spearheaded some. I thought that we should maybe just be venturing out into that realm and created stop motions with our friend Claire. just really looking, I think at that time too, it felt really, I don't know. It felt very, important to mirror back what, the sellers on the platform were producing in an aspirational way. So it felt personal. Mm-hmm. It felt like this is, you know, not just, just showing that we were part of, the community as well as, driving it forward, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you were an Etsy seller.
An Etsy seller before I started working there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what was your style when you were working together at Etsy? Was it similar to what your style is like now or not at all?
Oh, that is a good question.
it was definitely the beginning of us figuring out, I think, what our style would be. But I don't know if it was so much stylistically driven as it was materials driven. I don't know.
I think underlying concepts were sort of still maybe carry through. I think we both appreciate a bit of, definitely a refinement to the visuals, but also like a sense of humor, bringing some life to whatever.
And I think having creating. A little sort of surprise in a lot of things that we make that you might not know how it was made initially, but then there's maybe one thing to help you figure it out or one thing where you see the cut mark or you see the, you know, the drawn line and you're like, oh, okay, that was actually handmade.
Yeah.
And I guess as we've continued working in that way, a style has come through, I think, mainly just from our efficiency and understanding of certain materials and knowing, you know, what works for what context.
So did you learn at the time to like really photograph your scenes in the way that, you know, doing now?
That was one place that we did hire at Etsy. But when we set out on our own, we worked independently before we joined up as Party of One, and we both did all of our own photography independently for our work at that time. Mm-hmm. So that's something that came later.
That you learned to do later on your own. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was great having the ability to hire people for video or photo at Etsy. So we did have to adjust some of the ways that we were working. When we went,
but you could also learn from them, I guess.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely watching and seeing how they set up lights and what kind of camera are you using and what kind of lens are you using.
And
we knew a little bit about photography anyway, but to produce our own shoots was sort of a new beast. Really did require.
And also added another really interesting layer in terms of lighting and color and just really digging into the retouching side, which has played a huge factor in our work, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious how, like, I know on your website you describe yourself as specializing in, I think I'm quoting, but visual campaigns for brands and products with an emphasis in unique prop design, styling, and sets. And what's kind of striking about that definition is that you seem to leave yourself plenty of possibilities for what you're going to make. And like, I don't get the sense that you're limited in any way by that. So yeah, like I'd love for you to like actually describe, like, I guess it's kind of tough because if I say like describe what actually comes out of it, it seems limiting in a way, but yeah. Get like, how do you usually describe what you do like in Party of One?
I mean, I think we've used, honestly, that phrase on the website many times. Like, we bring products and brands to life usually through photography and through custom handmade and built sets.
Yeah.
So that is really open. And that some version of that, I think, is usually what I end up saying.
Yeah.
But within that, I think the materiality is always changing, and that does leave it really open. Like, we can make you something entirely out of food, or we can make you something that's like made out of fabric and a self sculpture, or it's out of paper. And we've worked in a ton of different materials and mixed them and worked at different scales as well.
So, yeah. And we're really like, I would say within that concept driven, right? So whatever idea, you know, we spend a lot of time in that, coming up with a really good idea or, you know, a background story for what we're creating. So whatever materials are in service to that is how we tend to execute. And that could be anything. But we have definitely, our work definitely has a range, I think also because of our differing backgrounds and how we can bring certain elements. I mean, currently we're working on something that's a real life scale. It's not, you know, for a photograph. There's a range. There's a range. Then we've been playing around with drawings as well. I mean, I don't.
I think it's just like whatever brings the project to the idea.
I don't know. For me, I think it's always like, you know, for a fun side project, like whatever joke we're trying to tell, like what's the best way?
So when you were freelancing together, how did you have a vision for Party of One that eventually, I guess, did you guys talk about it at that time, or did you get, were you guys like, oh yeah, like we'd like to have our own, like studio. Why don't we have our own studio? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we were working parallel for sure. I actually did, after Etsy, pursue a more exclusively illustration path. Mm. But again, I was still sort of betwixt between, and that sort of it left me feeling boxed in, I guess.
Yeah,
because I'm not a super drawing wouldn't be my go-to. It's more the sculptural sets, right?
Yeah.
Or materiality.
You seem to like dimension. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And yeah, for sure. And I love
how
materials
limit you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I play around, but it's not my first. So for illustration specifically, it's like when we're building these things, we sort of wanted to, I'm sorry. I think I'm moving away from the question for a little, but just bringing those across, like, more than one image, right? Like really mm-hmm. building these worlds out into something that can live in like a campaign or something like that. And mm-hmm. also not working with an art director, but being the art director as well and coming up with the idea. So, as we were working in a parallel way, we were getting similar work and we have similar things that we are drawn to. So it just seemed we would meet up. We would visit with each other just to sort of alleviate the stress of freelancing. And we started working actually, on like cathartic projects. I also have background working in public schools for arts nonprofits long before where I would bring like art materials to a classroom and we would work on a focus project. So I think that is sort of a cathartic thing in my back pocket. So we would get together in each other's homes and we started building out these piñatas. and they were really meant to be these cathartic objects, not only in the making, but ultimately in looking ahead in the smashing. And they and this sort of like fun in just creating our own projects and not client driven and letting them have their own stories. And I think with that, we just really sort of underscored where we do cross over.
Yeah, I think in that period, we were both, I was working from home at the time. Nicole had a studio in Greenpoint. So I think we were also, I mean, I'll speak for myself. I was kind of lonely. I was just like, I'd wake up and, you know, I think a lot of people that work from home kind of experience this initially where you're just like, where is the day? What's happening? Who am I? What's going on? Like, I'm in my home. I'm in my pajamas. I'm working. I need to go outside. Have I brushed my teeth? Like, it felt like a mess. So I really wasn't interacting with people as much anymore, especially coming out of like a huge company. So we would meet up and sometimes just set a limitation on ourselves where, you know, Nicole would bring materials over or I would bring materials and we'd say, okay, we're just going to make one thing today. I don't know what it's going to be. It might be ugly. Who cares? Let's just put it out there. And just give ourselves something to kind of like make that's a release and that's fun and easy. So we started that. Initially,
would you share that with other people?
We would force like ourselves to share it. Yeah,
we totally did. We had a hashtag ugly sculpture hot designs.
Yeah. And honestly, it was sometimes painful to share it because I thought we'd make something out of trash and it was just like a interesting sculpture and we'd photograph it and we're like, you know what, screw it.
I had
putting
no
it out
pain.
There.
I was comfortable.
I was uncomfortable sometimes. But that's kind of where the pinata. Yeah. Idea
did
started.
You get responses from that? Or
yeah, no? People really like those pinatas so much so that we thought maybe is this our business?
Oh, yeah, we're gonna make pinatas. Yeah. We're like, how can we make this feasible? We spend two people spend 3 days on it the entire day.
Yeah.
If we charge hourly, like, what? This is the most expensive pinata ever. Like, how do people do?
Well,
this?
You wouldn't want to charge hourly for pinata.
No,
but we're like, this is ridiculous. But maybe this is our life path: cathartic pinatas.
Yes,
the whole thing.
I still, in the back of me, think maybe.
starting a pinata.
Well,
business,
I think the pinatas could always come back. They were very funny.
I still love them. Also,
they
and
were
we do
funny.
Often get people coming out of the woodwork that are like, "Oh, that's such a good," I guess, just contextualization of a pinata. But yeah, I think that was sort of where that practice of us kind of working while we were both independently freelancing ended up. So we made a few of those. We photographed them. We kind of turned it into this little personal side project. And I think as we were doing that, yeah, we did start talking about like, oh, if this could be a business, what else could be a business?
Yeah.
Different ways that we could just continue making things together and also designing and illustrating, kind of combining all the things that we were each independently doing and then the things that we love to do together that we often did kind of need one another in support to make.
Yeah, for sure.
Like we would often pull each other in. Like Nicole brought me in for this big papercraft project that she was doing as like an assistant stylist on one day. So there were a lot of kind of larger scale situations where it just felt better to have two people that knew the materials and had trust in one another.
Yeah, I think that was really the case. For that papercraft project, it was a multi-image campaign for Michael Kors, and I felt the only person I wanted to come in with Melissa. In fact, she was out of town for one element of it, and I just was on my own.
So, Nicole, how did you get that particular job? Like, what were you?
Yeah. That was, I was working with an illustration agent at that time. So it came through that. I think, you know, a lot of times, the agents were great. A lot of people find your work. I think I was known more at that time for papercraft. So people would find me independently or go through my agent and it would all fold together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you slowly start to fold basically your two practices together.
Yeah.
But I guess the moment where you guys created Party of One, do you remember that? Do you remember what led to that actually happening?
I think we started, I think Party of One.
Oh, that was initially the name for our piñatas.
Yeah, it was.
Really?
Because they were, you know, they were these sad, emotional objects just for one person.
Yeah.
The catharsis was for
alone. We'll call the piñata company Party of One, and they're meant to just be purchased so you can have, your personal sad party or whatever emotional party you want to have with them and destroy them. And it was all about the catharsis. So that's where that name came from.
And I think that really solidified when, actually I have a friend who has a small gallery in Greenpoint. I think it's might be no longer actually, but we needed a name. We were talking with them and it actually didn't wind up happening for having an installation show.
So,
I think that's the first time.
They just were like, what do you call it? Yes, Party of One.
So in the beginning, when you created Party of One, I guess, were you looking for jobs on your own or did you have agents or how did that work?
Yeah, I moved away from my agents so that we could start just searching out work just independently for ourselves. And at that time, any job that would just land in our inbox, we would just gently rope the other person in and talk with the clients. And
okay, so sometimes people were unaware that you guys were two people.
Initially we didn't really make a huge thing out of it. We were just sort of trying it out with certain clients that felt like they would be open to it and say, I would like to bring in my partner on this. I don't even know if he would say the name of it, but just we started referring to ourselves as just our creative partners. I think we did that probably, I don't even know for how long, like maybe a few months. I know there are a couple of projects that we did that were unofficially Party of One that we worked on together, but we let the client know that we were working on it together.
And so it was really kind of like a trial period for you guys.
We actually did a fun editorial illustration project for a sadly no longer around online magazine called Damn Joan. And we were traveling between apartments, my tiny, tiny, tiny studio. And that was when we were like, wouldn't it be great just to have one space?
I think that was
the space was really the
was the tail end of it, because we started doing some projects that we were able to shoot in either one of our spaces, which were very small. So it was limiting there.
Yeah.
And then we started, getting a few jobs that we just physically needed more space. Some of the products we were shooting were larger. Nicole's fiance graciously let us use his large studio for one of the shoots. But at that point, we were like, okay, this is too much. We need a space of our own, and we just need to tell people that we're doing this officially. So yeah, I think all of those things sort of coincided.
Yeah.
And we actually found a space really close to where Nicole lives in Greenpoint that was open and I think had been open for a while. So we sort of just I feel like it all happened very quickly.
Yeah.
We saw it. We were freaked out. We decided we'd do it. We called our friend Jillian because it was like a lot of extra space. And so we wanted someone else to kind of maybe come in with us and you know, have their studio there as well. So she works there as a graphic designer. She also makes jewelry and has some vintage clothing there. So she works with us still. But yeah, we all quickly agreed to do that. And then I think within that month, or maybe it was a little before, I don't even remember, we officially posted something and made an Instagram account. We're like, we are Party of One.
Yeah.
Give us work.
It was a very soft.
Yeah.
But
a soft opening. Yeah.
It was
yeah.
a soft opening.
Yeah, but we had a website and Instagram, and I yeah. think that was pretty much it.
Yeah. But
that's not the impression you get now, definitely. Because now yeah. you kind of get the impression. I mean, if I hadn't been following you guys, which I hadn't, so I didn't know that it happened like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we were lucky that we had a lot of work we'd already done together
yeah.
at Etsy. So we had stuff kind of to fill in and things that we'd like helped each other with independently.
Yeah.
And work that still sort of felt aligned, even though maybe one of us independently had been working on it before we joined. So
yeah,
we were able to start with like a little kind of portfolio of work.
For sure.
And grow from there.
That felt at home together. And mm-hmm. we had relationships with clients that we had already built over the last couple of years
yeah,
that we could
yeah.
then just more join together.
Yeah, and that helps, so that I'm sure, really to great. Make that decision too. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
Because yeah, what was your plan for like sort of like, I guess, business development and promotion, all that stuff? Like, did you guys have a firm kind of direction?
Nicole just like laughed and leaned back when you asked that. I don't know if we had any real plan. We had independent clients that we had worked with and a yeah. lot of people that did cross over. So I think that was one part where we started, like, we had both worked for a lot of the same people in editorial.
So you were banking on those connections? Really?
We were also. Really we started banking with that. On that.
Yeah. And I think we just did a massive email to a ton of people. We
yeah,
tried
yeah.
to, you know, go in for some meetings at different agencies. I feel like we tried a bunch of different things. I don't know if we really knew the right way. But like, crazy
well,
enough, I feel like, yeah, people just started coming to us.
Yeah.
And I think there was like a period where we had to, you know, remind people like, oh, we're working with this other person now. But I think just our independent clients continued to come and we started just funneling them together. And eventually mm-hmm. everyone just came directly to Party of One. So
yeah.
I think we were super lucky the first year
yeah.
that we didn't have to do a ton of outreach and we
yeah.
did get people coming in.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Melissa or I are inherently crazy promoters, self-promoters,
yeah.
but I still do like have some faith that if you put out the work that you want to make, that and you're, you know, it's available publicly, if that's just Instagram, that people will hopefully recognize. And we have been very lucky with mm-hmm. that.
And I think so much of our work also benefits from sharing the process. At least I hope it does. I always feel like that's something
yeah.
that people are interested in finding out in terms of our work. And
yeah,
it also
I think so.
That,
yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Because you make stuff, it's more, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps to set an expectation with the people we work with of timing and price and just kind of what they're getting themselves into. So I think that's also, that has been a good way of promotion for us and of keeping people engaged with what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess if I were in your shoes when you were starting out, I would have been worried from a business side of things. Like I would have been worried, like, are clients going to pay us
yeah.
adequately
yeah.
for two people, I guess, because it's not necessarily like what they expect when they work with a
yeah
I don't know, I guess, but you were presenting yourself as an agency in a sort of way, I guess.
I would say a
design studio.
Studio
yeah.
Okay. So yeah. we can take on a lot of the project
mm-hmm.
yeah, and we can really shepherd things from the very initial ask to the very very end, so
yeah.
Yeah.
So you never really worried about that kind of thing?
I mean, yes. I think we still worry. I think yeah. it's a worry.
There's a benefit of, you know, when you're really busy, you have someone to share that workload with so we can bounce around different
yes.
projects and we can take on more than one person
yeah.
would be able to. But I think that's
yeah.
also at times our downfall, that we want to take on a lot of projects and then we get like, we have a lot going on at
yeah.
many times and that's not necessarily the best way to be making up that extra profit, I think, is just by like completely overloading.
Yeah, that's true. But I think over the course of time, we've it's been very hard for us to not be both super heads down and hands on on every single project together, because we really do work very, very well together. And we both enjoy similar things, but we have learned over time to just let things sort of divide out a little bit more. It really is just still the two of us. So we've had to do that.
I was going to ask, do you have like anybody else working in the studio with you?
When we have larger projects, we've brought on photographers and that's it.
In terms of admin and all that stuff, you guys all do
it? No, we do all of it. Which honestly, that takes up a lot of our time.
And I think that's been the one space now as we've grown a bit and now reached, I guess, almost 2 years that we're starting to, maybe talk about that as a possibility in terms of bringing on someone for more administrative or just operations.
Business development.
It's just, it's not really what we do, obviously. So we've been doing it as best we can, but I think if we didn't have to do it and we could focus on the creative, that would be
great.
I totally understand.
And
so you're talking more about delimiting your roles, I guess. Would you have like slightly different roles when you approach a project, or do you, is it not defined like that at all?
It's not really defined like that. I think we have natural leanings. I mean, we definitely share the concepting project 100% on every project, so that it's really, we both feel really strongly moving forward. But I think I...
How does that happen usually? Do you guys just...
We sit together. Yeah. We sit across from each other, you know, and
we just go through ideas and we're like, yes, no, I don't know. I think that was not as strong. What if we did that? What if we did that? And I don't feel like we've ever really, like, that process has always been super smooth for us.
Yeah, really good, really fun. It's definitely like a lot of laughter in those two.
And I think we both respect a good idea. So it makes it easy. You know, sometimes you just have to get something out there and we're both like, okay, yes, but no, that's not going to happen. And like, once we know, once we hear the thing that's like the right idea, kind of doesn't matter where or how it came from.
And then it quickly, you know, morphs into, again, even if it's one person came up with that idea, then like the other person's still going to bring something to it. So that's very, very smooth for us. But then we will break out. I think we really, again, we both love doing all of the things, but I think with timing, and also just understanding the fees that we're getting, especially in things like editorial projects, you know, like we have to have more than one thing going at the same time. So we will break out those roles. Mm-hmm. I'd rather Melissa speak for, I don't know, herself, but I do think Melissa is, I'm more, perhaps more process driven. So I could live in that world for a very long time and feel pretty comfortable in that. And Melissa is more, let's button this up
and organize. I tend to gravitate. I feel like we bounce back and forth throughout most project processes, where I'm very much driven to really planning out maybe what it is that we're making. And I think often Nicole learns more from working with materials and from the process of experimenting, and then comes to a conclusion about what is the best way.
Yeah.
So I feel like in some of the more successful projects where we've had like that, we have separated out, and maybe I will work more on like the, I don't know, the sizing or the plan or the design of like what it is that we're making. If there's type involved, I often gravitate towards that because I had it like a, when I was working independently, side note, I was like, thinking about doing more of a lettering driven illustration thing. So I was working on that a lot more, and I still gravitate towards projects in that way. So I would often kind of work on that while Nicole would be experimenting with the materials and kind of coming to conclusions about, you know, what was working or what wasn't working.
Yeah.
And then we would often come together and make final decisions on how we would be moving forward. And then I think usually with the capturing of the image, I tend to be more involved in maybe like the lighting and like the shooting process of it. And maybe some of the more like just cleaning up of an image. And then Nicole is always really involved in the color. And I think really tends to bring that out and add these like little kind of glossy touches to images in the end.
Yeah.
So we'll pass our image back and forth.
We pass them back and forth and retouching for sure. And I think also too, like I drive everybody crazy with my styling.
Oh yeah. Well, it's always like, wait, just one more, move it one more inch.
So Melissa's often more behind the camera and I'm making everyone wait.
Like, all right, let's get it going.
But you know, we work it out.
Do you ever have very like rocky projects where you're disagreeing with one another?
Sometimes it's like really random things that are really small and like one thing will trip us up.
One person feels very strongly about this particular detail.
Or I just like the thing that I'm thinking of is like we were just trying to photograph a mirror.
Don't even.
And we got so pissed because we were like, oh God, it's so much harder than we thought.
I drew the most simple sketch I think I've ever drawn in my life for the concept. And we laughed at it. We thought, great. The art director was like, love it. We were like, this is going to be a piece of cake. It was a total damn nightmare. Mirrors are very tricky. And then it was, what does the mirror look like? And I got, because I didn't feel super excited about our reflections, then I started getting very stressed about every single detail. So like, hyper-focusing on, like, is this the right mirror, actually, though? And
like, what we went to three bodegas.
And this was a very small spot editorial. Oh, my gosh, is this okay to share? I don't know.
You could probably figure it out if you look at our work. But I think it's, just to speak more generally about it, it was just, like, when one little thing that we're like, this is super easy and chill, we got this, and then, like, something surprises us in maybe the process of the materiality that we didn't expect. And I feel like that sometimes is the thing that trips us up.
Yeah. That is also just a challenge of working in the way that we do.
Yeah. And with timing, like usually that's the thing. It's not the challenge itself. It's just that like, oh shit, we had to have this done today.
Yeah.
And now we have to re-experiment and find a new way.
It's the timing. The timing causes stress. And then yes, we are both stressed.
Like normal people. Yeah.
Like normal people. But it still is like we're still on board. We still, again, it's all goes back to that snowstorm coming in and a snowstorm. Our work ethic is ridiculous. So we will just hash it out and get through it and then it's done.
Yeah.
And it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, look, we talked about before the show going through maybe one of your projects to have you like kind of explain exactly how the process works.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you want to do that with an editorial project of yours, but yeah, like it'd be great to hear exactly like how you approached it and how you worked during a particular project. I don't know which one you want to pick.
Sure. Sure. I think editorial is fun just because it does have all of the the pressure cooker arc.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is like the most related, I think, to illustration and how people come to us as art directors or as clients.
I mean, I think we could talk about, do we want to talk about Washington Post? I think that was a fun one because it had a lot of different components.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And actually was not very painful.
Yeah. Yeah. So we did an editorial for Washington Post for their like annual spring cleaning edition, which obviously they do annually, and this is like the 11th one.
And was so that the cover one? Or
Yeah, it's the cover, and then I think it was, what, 12?
Oh.
A bunch of spot illustrations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Were very simple.
It was a really fun one because there's a precedent for these, right? So there's so many awesome covers in the past, and the challenge is really to come up with a new way of approaching the same theme.
Mm-hmm. And some of them initially, or of past examples, were purely illustrated, and some of them were photo-based. So I think we pretty much just exclusively always decide we're going to do something photo-based in some way. Sometimes we'll include something that's more illustrative, like in this case where there's this lettering on top of the final image, but we almost always find a way to do something through the lens of a photograph first.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how granular you want to get into it, but, you know, I think our process is pretty standard to most other people.
Yeah.
We send in sketches, but I think the one difference is that we also often send in reference for either the materials or kind of the tone of the photo. Like, will it be more bright, or will it be like kind of gloomy and dark and mysterious or something like that?
We have to provide a lot of information in the beginning because the leap is pretty large from a line drawing sketch. Sometimes, I mean, with other projects, not this one, but we will do even like Illustrator or Photoshop images that really like show very color, specifically texture. Color, texture, dimension, so that there's no great surprises at the end. Mm-hmm. For this, we did just show pencil sketches and aligned on a concept, but the actual set for the cover was enormous, and we've learned some things, which has been really fun to figure out, you know, just getting like a center mount for our camera. This spring cleaning image took up a huge, huge amount of space on the floor of our studio. So that was fun. But
how long did you get to do that?
Oh, this one, it was, you know, editorial can be a very tight turnaround.
Right, yeah.
But we are very lucky that most of the art directors we work with do recognize that the work that we're producing will take a bit of time. So, and they often give us multi-image uh-huh. opportunities just to sort of like, honestly, like bulk up the fee.
I think so.
Understanding uh-huh. that, you know, this is a yeah. bit of a different process. But this,
one, this we had about a week.
I think we maybe a little longer.
Yeah. But yeah,
and
it was.
How
was
long does it take you from? I mean, it takes you at least a week for sure.
I mean, I think more of it is actually just, you know, getting approval on the concept and then uh-huh. making any tweaks that might be yeah. needed and making sure that everyone understands what it is that we're going to be making and what the colors might be. I mean, I think for this one, the sketch is pretty much exactly what yeah. we ended up making.
It really
obviously
is.
The items are a little bit different.
But the shoot, the styling of all of these yeah. items on the floor and photographing it.
It was just a day,
it
really.
Was just
we
a
just
day.
Pulled everything out of our prop closet. And I think the challenge with this one was we knew that we had to align the lettering and the typography to the different items. So I think while Nicole, actually, this is a good example yeah. of how we often work. Nicole was kind of arranging and making compositions with the items on the floor. Mm-hmm. And I was laying out different options for letter forms and sizing on top of those images so that we could take a sample photo and then kind of like in parallel arrange the type and make sure that everything kind of corresponded to yeah. some of the different pieces that were in there.
Yeah. So the planning was happening sort of in real time on this one.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the shoot itself, once we had everything arranged, we set it up and shot it that same day. And then usually we, you know, try to send it in pretty early on just to get feedback. So we often have sets that are just kind of sitting in the space for, you know, as long as we need to wait to get approval.
Yeah, that was my next question. It's like, what happens if the art director says, do this, change this,
yeah.
change this?
I mean, we hope that they tell us pretty immediately. But with this one, we just had everything like exactly the way we left it.
Yeah.
The camera settings, the lights, just turn them off and left
so that you can tweak it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, if that doesn't happen to work out or feedback comes later, I mean, we are both pretty adept at moving stuff digitally, but mm-hmm. ideally,
yeah,
we want to be able to. Sometimes a reshoot is just not an option though. So we'll figure it out a different way. Mm-hmm. For all the spots, that was a super fun challenge. And those were just like quick moments. Mm-hmm. And some of them are handcrafted, some of them are digital, some of them are styled, some of them are combinations of the two. So they were just really like almost fun little
Yeah, they were super
moments.
Quick. I think Very we would do quick. Like 3 or 4 a day.
Yeah. We really did rip a book in half. That was fun.
Mm-hmm. Burned some of Nicole's old
oh, yeah.
yearbook photos.
Yeah, we burnt my photos. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, the article for just to give some context
yeah.
was just like the things that you're getting rid of this season. So a lot of it wasn't just material items, but like, you know, emotional baggage or
habits.
Like habits or yeah, things that
yeah,
you're
I can't think of a more perfect
of.
Subject for you guys.
Yeah.
yeah.
So yeah, some of the examples were like, what was it?
Using you're just exclamation
done
points.
Using exclamation or, points. You're done with the stock market. You're over astrology. You're over yeah. yearbook photos. You're over yeah. bacon. I mean, it was a funny little mix.
Yeah. Yeah, but we moved through these very, very, very quickly, actually. Mm-hmm. And they were just a delight, honestly.
Yeah, I feel like this is the one example where our process in making some of these quick photo things is probably timing-wise on par with a traditional illustrator.
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. you know, we're not having to make we are making certain color decisions and things like that, but we get to just use this real object and mm-hmm. and alter it digitally, which I think... Yeah, it might almost take the same amount of time as just drawing it.
How do you usually alter digitally? Do you use Photoshop? Or
we use a couple of things, actually.
What else? Mainly Photoshop.
Yeah, it's Photoshop. We've started experimenting doing color correcting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think there's a few different ways for color correction, but in terms of, yeah, making big edits, it's definitely Photoshop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think now we really know, you know, where we can get away with things and it looks natural and where it's much better to just shoot it in real life and get that perfect shadow or get that perfect kind of color reflection so that we're not, you know, making it too obvious that it's perhaps faked in some way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As much as we can capture real, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense of what really attracts clients to your work? Like what they really look for when they hire you?
That is a good question.
Because I have a feeling that there's not a lot of creatives actually doing what you're doing.
I always feel like maybe just because it's the people that we're looking at that have similar styles or ways of working that we're like, oh, it's so prevalent in the creative world.
It's so common.
I do think it is not. And there are a lot of people that are more traditionally in like the styling and set design world. And that, you know, maybe are working more in like advertising or video kind of campaigns. And then there are people that are doing paper craft and they're working in one medium, but it's photographic. And so we kind of relate to that. But I do feel like our the thing that maybe that I think would attract people to us is that our medium is not defined and there is a lot of openness to how we're creating things and what we can create for people.
Yeah, we would hope it's that, yeah, that we're somehow putting out there that we can come up with a strong concept and make it happen.
Yeah.
but I do think people are like, oh, wow, is this, and I, you know, is this real though?
Yeah.
You know, can we, yeah. So that. Yeah.
Do you think people are attracted by the idea that this is real, this is in 3D software, you know, that it's actually something positive for people?
Maybe there is something about the idea of like bringing something to life in a real way and having your product or your thing kind of included in that. It makes it feel a little magical for people, maybe. I mean, I feel like people have said that, so I'll go ahead and say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there are certain images that people keep coming back to that are like, it's for lack of a better word, all I can say, it's like, it's the thing that we find on Pinterest of ourselves. Where it's like that holiday campaign that we worked on initially at Etsy. We have like created new and updated versions of a similar kind of layout where it's like, tactile objects and type in some way interacting and like people just eat that shit up. They love it.
I think it's the combination of the elements that we bring together, right?
But I think with some of those things, like the Washington Post cover is something that a lot of editorial art directors have come to us and mentioned that they've seen that in particular, and so I don't know if it's just the fact that it was a cover, so the scale was more obvious, but I feel like it is that combination of the illustration and the real life and the photography in an illustration context, perhaps, that like gets people excited.
Yeah. What's kind of interesting is that sometimes in some of your like editorial examples in your portfolio, like it gets noted as illustration by, and I was wondering like, do you call it an illustration? Do you call it, you know,
it's a photo illustration, I think.
Yeah,
I think we tend to refer to it as that and have started to say that that's, you know, just almost explicitly.
Because calling it a photograph seems to not capture exactly what it is, I guess.
Yeah, I think photo illustration is the best
overall. But often they won't say photo illustration, they'll say,
I feel pretty comfortable with that.
Yeah, in the context of how most people are working.
Yeah.
We don't worry about it too much.
Yeah.
But I think if we were referring to it ourselves, we might just add photo in there.
Do you find yourself enjoying working on commercial campaigns more than editorial, or is there, you don't really have a preference?
I like them both for different reasons. Yeah. I really do like the race of editorial. Just, you know, it's always going to be like a sprint challenge. That's exciting. But I really love when we can have some time and that happens yeah. more with a campaign. And we can really flesh out concepts and really develop a lot of different components of what we might create. So I think they are both satisfying. Mm-hmm. Like one's yeah. a snack, a really great snack, and another is like a delicious long meal.
Yeah, I think also with editorial, sometimes the prompts are just like wilder.
From the onset, so they
just want us to make something crazy. Like we recently, this isn't on our website yet, but we recently did illustrations for Verge for this article about weed beer.
Uh-huh.
And they referenced a personal project that we did last summer, which was like this sort of exquisite corpse of us illustrating on these like white painted cans that we turned into these abstract pieces.
I know what you're talking about.
And like, it was sort of like just a fun thing that we did to kind of learn about each other's styles again or relearn each other's styles. But they were like, that is what we are really looking at for this editorial. Can you make something that is like that, but more related to, you know, psychotropic drugs and weed and the effect that that induces throughout the article and having like a multi-image thing. So that was a really funny, fun prompt.
Yeah.
And great article.
Yeah.
And something that, you know, unless someone came to us to design a weed beer, which we are not opposed to, you know, the opportunities to create something like that, I think, are a little more limited in commercial campaigns because there are more opportunities along the long process to have something or have someone say no.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think there is some.
It really sounds like you guys do a lot of personal projects that end up then spurring new projects with clients, which for is sure. kind of interesting. Yeah. Goes back to the pinata origin story.
Yeah, for sure. I think again, it's along that, you know, the lines of thinking that if you're putting out the work that you want to get, that it will find you. I think personal projects are important. We also really use them, again, I still think, in sort of a therapeutic way.
Yeah.
So like, and we bridging the gap between the two of us.
There's something about being the two of us, like the two of you, sorry.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like it would be more cathartic in that way, because when you're by yourself and you're making a personal project, sometimes it can feel like, you know, you did something, but you get no response. You're by yourself in a bubble, you know? Yeah. So I could see how it would be more cathartic to have somebody else make that with you.
Yeah. Or sometimes have someone else respond to it without the context of it being like a paid project that has certain constraints. Like we sort of become, we'll work with one another, but then we also become sometimes like one another's sounding board or like, I don't want to say client, but maybe client in the situation where we're like, oh, we could also use this in this way, or we're sort of taking someone else's, in our case, like I might look at Nicole's personal product idea and say, oh, that spurs an idea for me for this that is related to what we're doing, and kind of we start building off of one another's independent ideas and kind of mixing them with some of our paid work at times, or ways that we can incorporate it into our paid work. So
yeah,
they start to evolve.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think it's a nice testing ground to try out a new method. Either means of expression or material. It's just nice to get a little test run in there.
Yeah. But I feel like even personally, for me, doing a personal project is very difficult. And maybe for most people.
Yes.
I will just say for me.
It definitely sounds more fun when you guys describe doing it together.
I think once we've decided, like I'm someone who needs to understand like the context of a project, I think maybe in a more intense way. So I often, it like takes me a lot. Okay. Yes, I do. But it takes me a long time to like, once I understand the parameters of what we're doing, even if it's a crazy idea, if I'm like, okay, but it's under this umbrella or this context, this is like what we're finding out through this experience, then I'm on board. But sometimes for me to like get that to click,
Melissa wants to know why we're doing it. So sometimes I have to like trick her or something. I'm like, I have an idea and it's like a full thing.
Well, why
and this
are we
is
doing
how
that?
It would live.
Yeah.
I know. I have to show I mean,
it's hard for
me
to just get in on it on the premise of fun, which like kind of sucks.
I know. But. And I don't struggle. I mean, I do struggle. I definitely have an arc of despair in every project I work on. But but I don't struggle as much with personal projects. I think I find it, I don't know, maybe it goes back to like my art background where I'm like, this is my time. I can make a project feel like a crossword puzzle, right? So it doesn't really feel emotional.
That's amazing. Like, but I wonder how you get that kind of, like how you approach personal projects that way, because I'm in a way, that's what we all want. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm really like, it's like a form of play for me.
I feel like you said something once just offhand that was kind of illuminating to me, that you were talking about the art process and how just like, oh yeah, you could iterate on an idea forever.
Yes.
And it can never be done. And yes. I was like, the horror.
Yeah. Yeah. That horrifies me as well.
For me, this is like joy, right? I'm like, it's endless. This is, yeah.
We but can I can look understand.
At it so many different ways and twist and turn it around so I can stay engaged for a really long time. But that is for a personal project that doesn't work. And yeah, so that's the only place, right, in a personal project where I can really like give things time, let them sit. Also, I don't have a great deal of attachment to the outcome in those in the personal projects. Mm. I have more of an attachment to the process and the ideas that might spring from it, or maybe something that I'm going to want to use later. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel very stressed, mm-hmm. actually, about what it looks like. And sometimes it looks, you know, just not great at all. But I still feel satisfied in some way. And that's different than client work.
Surprising, yeah.
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 Very different than client work, where I feel very, very concerned
about the outcome. Yeah.
About the outcome. Yeah. So it's a time for me to let it just not matter as much.
Yeah. I like that about, I mean, I wish I could get there more, and I admire that as like an ability, I think. But I feel like the thing with and maybe this is like a social media thing, which kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Just like always having to have something that you can like use in some way, and my brain is always going to like, oh, this might be like a fun thing, but how does this fit into what we're doing? Like, how
right.
can we share it? Yeah. How can we use it to promote ourselves? And I know that you think that too, but it becomes limiting at a certain point in terms of exploration and coming up with new things and not caring if like maybe what you make is not that great or like doesn't fit or you don't like it. And so I do have a harder time with that, I think, maybe.
That is real. I mean, that could be part of the arc of despair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you guys, how do you guys usually approach the whole social media thing? I mean, you don't make things for social media is what I would
I mean, we might
guess.
Make things for other people's social media.
Yeah, yeah. But that's different because that takes the pressure off. I don't know.
In my personal Instagram, I share stuff that maybe like isn't that successful and personal. Mm. And I'm like, well, this is where else, I mean, I could just have it on my, because it'll, you know, largely be digital. I'm like, or I could just leave it on my computer. So I mean, it's not that I made it for Instagram, but I'm like, oh, I'll just share it.
Mm-hmm. It has less pressure on it. I think also now that we have, you know, Party of One to share.
Yeah.
Work,
on right. our Party of One, we don't do that as much. We definitely
try and focus just on like, you know, what people are paying us to do and what our work is and sharing what's new.
Yeah. But
do you guys still make work independently? Like stuff that you don't collaborate on at all?
I feel like we actually just started that up a little bit again.
Yeah.
I started working with a friend on a project who's based in Florida on something that's branding, which we have done together in Party of One. But I think it's something that I had sort of a freestanding relationship with her already from when I wasn't was independently working as a freelancer. Mm-hmm. And so it was just kind of a nice opportunity to try that again and to kind of go back to like doing something that's a little bit more like from where I started. So I've enjoyed that.
I think for me, it goes more towards the arts side. I mean, I wouldn't call myself an artist at this point, but I definitely like have concepts rolling around in my head that I want to see happen, and if it's not a joint interest, wishing me I might just do it on my own. And I definitely have been working just playing with shapes. I was very inspired by a recent HBO special and loved it so much that I definitely have been sort of obsessed with moving shapes around, and I don't want to make anybody else have to do that with me.
I think now we've sort of embraced like even being in the same room together, but each working on our own kind of like personal tick that we want to like, or itch that we want to scratch.
Yeah.
And I think in the first year, maybe we were sort of like bringing every personal project in as like, oh, let's do this together. And sometimes it worked out, and sometimes we were both into it, and sometimes only one of us was into it. And then it kind of like would become weird. And
It's just, we're still learning that. Definitely. So if Melissa would sort of explore branding, I think a comparable for me for like I would maybe, if the shared interest in a paper craft project wouldn't be there, that I might pursue that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
but,
kind of been
the, but it's the still sometimes. All really can fold under the studio. You know, it's one of those things. It's because it is so fluid in a way, because we do share such a range of work.
Yeah, yeah. It's rare for one of us to be like, I have no interest, and the other one to be like fully on board.
Yeah, that would be rare.
So
yeah, I guess, and also what I'm thinking is because it seems so spontaneous, your association really with one another, that I'm wondering like how you communicate with one another and give feedback and all that stuff, because it sounds like you have a relationship where you kind of feel each other out very well. I don't know.
I think, but I don't know if that's true. Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. I think when we first started, I mean, yeah, I feel like we are friends and we've worked together for a long time. So we know how to read one another.
Yeah.
Generally, we can tell what each other's moods are. I think we know how to address like conflict if there is conflict.
Yeah.
But we actually brought in a friend of ours who we also know from Etsy. Her name is Morgan Evans. And like within our first year, once we got the space, there was just a lot going on and a lot changing. And she has a freelance company as well. She does sort of, how would you describe it? Like
it's like institutional organization.
Yeah.
But she, that like, sounds people. Cold. She's yeah. really like a
she's like a work therapist.
She's like of. A work therapist. So she helps companies when they're scaling. Mm-hmm. She helps with inter-office communications and best practices to keep everybody feeling like
did
safe
she help
and
you guys?
Happy. Yeah. She really did. she was so, we were not in crisis. So we were sort of a weird client for her, I think. But we really wanted, since it was such a huge change. And also, you know, the funny thing is we are so entirely collaborative, but really we are two of the most like independent people. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, yeah. like we don't collaborate with other people really.
Yeah, and I think like, people have very strong desires and like creative.
Yeah, we're both very opinionated. We're both very strong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What we're interested in. So it's like, it's a funny thing. So just getting the space and that changes your work hours, right? Like when you're used to working independently, like we show up every day pretty much, you know, and are there all day, and just the growing pains of just like, how do we do this? So we brought Morgan Evans in, and she was remarkable because she helped us hear each other in a different way. And I think also one of the things that really stuck with me, like really hear what the other person was saying. And I think that goes from just personal, you know, communications, but also with critiquing, you know, like I think we really respect each other's talent and just thought process, everything. So we're not going to take it personally, right? Or we'll also kind of know what the other person's tastes are. So we can almost usually anticipate.
All you need is a look.
And you're like, yeah. And I'm like, all right, let me just get the idea out. It's fine. and like we don't take things super personally in that way. But just in terms of like having such a close and small, you know, studio that we run together, I think we, because we are different people, like just learning to not push each other to the polarity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. That was the biggest thing that kind of came out of it that she helped us realize was it maybe on our own, we have a lot of similarities, but in moments of, you know, stress or just in dealing with this kind of whole new world that we were building with each other. Sometimes it did sort of push us to be more like designer art brained or more like the organizational one and the sculpture one or whatever, like whatever those extremes are, which
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
They would sometimes come out.
Yeah. But the truth of it is, of course, is that we both, you know, really have all of those things in us. So, you know, we just might have leanings. And I think that helps with critique too, right? Like, but with that, there is a respect. I'm like, okay, Melissa, you know, like I understand a lot of her strengths. So I will just sit back a little bit and trust.
Yeah.
And I think happens
likewise.
Both ways. Yep.
Do you ever have a situation where somebody presents an idea and the other one says, you know, I don't like it or something?
Yeah.
Like, how do you give feedback? Because I struggle with that. I tend to be very blunt with my feedback if I give feedback
I mean, I think, like I said, like we both respect a good idea and we both often know like what, even if we're presenting like 50 ideas collectively between the two of us, like it's pretty easy to pick out like, okay, these are the three best ones that make sense for the client, make sense for the project, make sense for us to make.
Yeah.
Like sometimes we'll have one that like, we're like, oh, I'm personally just really into that one. And like, we'll bring it into the mix, but.
Yeah. But then we let it go to the client and the client will have the ultimate say. Choice. So, but we will literally just say that to each other.
Yeah.
I do not like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's fine. It's like we are just
don't think that's wrong.
Yeah. It's just, you know, we're not like locked on to anything in the very beginning. I think when things move along, I think we're sensitive to each other. So we're not, you know,
because when one person has invested a lot of time in a concept, it can feel
So I think we provide feedback very early to avoid any later conflict. Yeah.
And I mean, usually we're in the same room working on things. So even if one of us is not directly involved in what the other one's doing, you know, not a ton of time is wasted if someone's like going down a path that the other one doesn't really agree with. We can usually like catch it ahead of time and talk about what we want to do or how we want to kind of align, or just hear the other person out and be like, okay, I didn't think you were going to do this, but like, if you're on a path, go for it. I trust. So sometimes that happens, but
yeah. But ultimately, you know, we do have the client come in and
yeah,
you know, that's going to be a whole
that other. Takes away the personal part
yeah.
of it.
Cause yeah.
Because like, well, we're really aligned.
For either one of us.
Yeah. We've had, you know, we are in full alignment in front of a client. So, so that is an automatic, that's just going to happen. So whatever happens in the process before that, like we've sorted it out before we present. Mm-hmm.
In terms of your actual space, like what does it look like? Do you guys have like adjoining desks or do you work on either side of the room? Like
we tried having individual spaces when we first got it. And we would just always end up like at the one tiny shared table, like across the room, sitting across from each other, like looking at each other's computer. So I think that's kind of like where we ended up. We have one main table that we sit at and we concept at and we eat at.
We kind of scoot our chairs around. Once I like sat at a different table, but it was like weird. And
then, we try having a, like independence and we always just kind of end up creeping back to the same table.
We changed now. I was always facing the window and now Melissa faces the window. I mean, but the space is quite large, right? Because we have big. So we reserve so much space for a set. And then we also have like a very large prop area where we have everything stored and organized. And then we
So is it just one room and then the prop area?
Yeah, it's one large room. But it's pretty much a square. And I would say 1/4 of it is a prop closet. And then another 1/4, our friend Jillian is working. And so then
we have the other half of it. Like a half of that is all photo area that we kind of keep open or we have, I mean, it's always changing. We just have like rolling tables and it's either the place where we set up or it's the place where we're making or it's the place where, you know, paint is drying or it's the place where we're setting props up for a shoot. So that's always just like open space. And then there's just a big table and like a work table and a sitting table.
Yeah, we have like a standing work table and then we sit. Pretty much across from each
other. Yeah, it's funny when we don't have a shoot happening that day and we're just like working on a deck, for example. Like we're only using like a tiny little area in the space. Yeah. So sometimes it feels like, oh man, we should do something with the rest of this. But when we use that space, we really use that space.
We really
filled
need
it up before. So
I'm intrigued by this prop closet. Like where?
Oh, it's great.
Where do you get all your props? First of all, like, is there a place or is there a like? An assortment of places that you look for props. Are you always looking for props?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think we find stuff. So much of our stuff is customized. So it's not a straight prop. So
but you find
it,
something and you think, oh, I can make this out of
it. Yeah, but I think I'm like horrible with that. I honestly have to say my fiance is very happy this no longer is in our home. But more so, I think I've been a huge collector of materials. So like I'd say we have like 25%.
Textiles or?
Oh yeah, textiles, flocking materials. Oh, I save a lot of recycling package material because it has wonderful sculptural properties to it. Melissa is rolling her eyes.
Like tiles, like things like that.
Tiles,
It's useful. At this point, I'm like, okay, I get it.
Yes.
In the beginning, when we were first getting our space together and we had, you know, all of our materials and like a thing for fabric and a thing for yarn and a thing for like our bought items and a thing for made items. And then it was like bags and bags of like styrofoam and yes. like cans and yes. just like plastic padding.
Yes.
I was like, do we really need to yes. use this? But we have used
yes,
it.
Yes, we have. Also, yes, I made us keep a lot of like recycling cans, but that proved.
Yes, but now the cans yes. are done.
But we let go of the cans. We threw the cans away. Because they fulfilled their
promise. So a lot of the material is actually recycled, yeah.
Yeah, so that's good. But yeah, but as far as props go, yeah, we'll buy stuff for a specific shoot and uh-huh. then we just hang on to it. I mean, like
we'll repurpose something we've already used and yeah. transform it for a new place.
Yeah.
But I feel like we have a few, I mean, a lot of stuff is like, to be honest, like dollar store shapes or items that we're yeah, like repurposing yeah, yeah. and adding to and painting and like making it look totally transformed.
Yeah.
How about like flea markets and stuff?
Yeah, you guys yeah. for do sure.
That a lot? Yeah.
Done
yeah.
that. I went to yeah. Brimfield for the first time and got a few things for a shoot.
Yes.
I think also like one of our magical places that we discovered was like we went to Canal Rubber for the first yeah. time.
What is that?
I think last year.
It's a, we have a lot of like, it feels so lucky in New York, honestly. There's yeah, so many
New York for
it's
that.
Just great, right? So there's like the Fabric District, there's the Plant District, uh-huh. then around Canal Street in Chinatown, uh-huh. there's a lot of specialty stores. So there'll be a store that just has all forms of rubber. Or all like forms of
rubber
foam.
Cording, rubber yeah. foam, rubber shapes, so, rubber tubing, like weird.
There's a rubber
channels.
Store, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so just, cool. It's just wonderful. Yeah. yeah, there's a plexiglass store, you know, there's oh, just that's so, great. There's so much.
So a lot of those places, yeah, I think just like for shapes and forms and textures and like materials that you didn't expect, like often I think it's exciting when we find something that, you know, looks like it could be transformed into something that feels like heavy marble, but it's actually made of foam and it's really mm-hmm. light and easy to use. We're like, oh, this would be so useful yeah. for a shoot. We can carry it, but it looks transformed and it feels like a totally different material.
Yeah.
So we look for, I think, opportunities like that a lot where yeah. we can make something other than what it is.
So our closet is full.
What's your favorite material to work with? Do you have a favorite? I mean, I think no. it's probably hard to... But is there something you gravitate towards? Like,
I feel like you would more than me, but I can't even think.
No, I can't really think. I do think I fell in love with paper for a good spell. We had a really nice romance.
Yeah.
But I feel like I hit against the limits of that for myself personally. I still really enjoy looking at it. And I still enjoy when it can be incorporated just because of the pure flexibility, right? Like you can make anything out of paper. Mm-hmm. But I really love texture and tactility. So mm-hmm. I'm always open to working with something new. I've had a great deal of fun working with food or things mm-hmm. that look like food but weren't food. Like we made a lot of fake ice cream recently and that was really fun. I just yeah. like the challenge, you know? Yeah. I really like... a challenge. And I love it when I'm going to say it, a plan comes together and what I think a material might do actually does. It? Yeah. yeah. It's just the greatest joy for me. So I think it's really like just discovering how things interact, almost like scientific, you know, mm-hmm. like how will this mixture react against this surface? And mm-hmm. then when it works, it's just great.
Yeah. I don't know if I have that so much with materials. There might be certain shapes or techniques that I'm drawn to yeah. just because I understand them and I know how to make them work. So mm-hmm. I can anticipate a good result.
Yeah, I think forms really yeah. speak to you.
But often more also like I get excited by like lighting possibilities yeah. or yeah. how to like transform an image. Like I just love to see, it's hard I think for me sometimes to see, you know, whatever thing is on the table and like understand it unless it's through an actual lens and I can see like what the final thing is going to look like. So once I've understood like how it catches light or how it looks with shadow, I can like fully understand, I guess, the final image. And I get excited by that.
Yeah.
More so than the
objects. Yeah, I can totally understand that. Like I love, for example, like glossy objects. I mean, I do a lot of airbrush illustrations. So,
oh, yeah.
But
so
I'm
beautiful.
Obsessed mm-hmm. with like, like the mm-hmm. reflection of stuff.
Is, yeah.
I don't know yeah, why it's like so. A- yeah. But it definitely like I'm attracted to metals and like mm-hmm. Glassy things, you know, mm. like, but yeah, I can definitely, I see that in some of your work too, like that kind of love of the surface and stuff. It's just yeah, that for you, you create it. For me, I would try to like, I guess, render it, if that
yeah.
makes sense.
Yeah.
That feels harder, honestly, like making an iridescent tennis ball that is photographed and you get these crazy colors.
But that's
shadows.
Why it's kind of cool too, because you get to like make it from, mm-hmm. and it's not real, but you know, Of course, airbrush doesn't look real. It looks like a weird reality where everything's shinier, which I love for that reason.
Yeah. I actually love that too.
Yeah. We had like a brief moment where we were really working a lot with like iridescent things. And we had a project where we had to make like a reflecting pool.
Oh, yeah. That was really challenging and fun. And
then I think with everything, I was like, oh, we have to keep using these like reflective moments. And this, I was like really locked on like.
There's something really attractive and satisfying about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but remember the mirror.
Oh, yeah.
That was when
we hit the dreaded mirror.
We hit it. No, I know it's going to come back. We're gonna conquer it. But yes. But yeah, discovering how things work in camera, I would definitely say that is a really magical moment.
Yeah.
What kind of camera do you use? Do you use a particular one that...
We have a Canon Mark III and we use a few different lenses.
We have some nice lights.
Yeah, since our work is fairly small, we tend to use a macro lens a lot now and have like really liked that one.
Because they're like miniatures when you build them out?
Sometimes. I mean, it's tabletop for the most part. But
not tiny.
Not tiny, rarely. We had one project for a jewelry company and her jewelry was so, so small that our sets were pretty miniature.
They were like tiny diamond studs. So we made like, I don't know, the set was probably only like 3 feet wide, but it was super detailed and small. So that one in particular, it helped with, or like with the Mercedes-Benz project where we were
because they're like cars. Toy cars, right?
Yeah, that was very small.
I like that a lot because I used to model airplanes like on the side. I love the miniature aspect of it, of making something. But yeah, it's, I thought you did a lot of stuff in miniature, but I wasn't sure because like, for example, building furniture in miniature, I find incredible. But
yeah. I think there's sometimes like a little dollhouse quality. Can be fun, but I guess it's more of a middle scale.
Yeah,
yeah.
The time it doesn't get too tiny. That in itself is its own like.
It is. Yeah.
Skill set. We actually going back to that Mercedes project and going back to also like the magic that happens or like what part of the process. We actually had a really wonderful time with lighting for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was that hot pink image.
It was like
all
80s
real,
vaporwavy thing.
And it was like a real moment.
So do you use like gels to have that kind of color or like?
Yeah, we use gels or we'll use many of the weird plastic things that we have that are different colors and we'll layer things. So we'll layer like a gel with like an iridescent translucent acrylic and then maybe sometimes like a blue packing material to add like a blue glint. So yeah, we've mixed a lot of different things for some projects, but for that one, it was just a straight up gel. I think it just like,
It came together. It really came together. Yeah. It was really exciting.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'd love to see how you guys work. It's like, it still has a fair bit of mystery even after you explain it. But yeah, it's really interesting. So I think we're almost at the end, but
wonderful.
Usually I just ask like some quick fire questions at the end. One of the ones I didn't ask you is actually like, it's a fairly general question and kind of hard to answer actually, but it's just asking you if you could give creatives one piece of advice, what would it be? And you guys can answer individually or together, you know.
I mean, I feel like one thing I've said before, and I think you even just said it today, Nicole, was just like putting together a portfolio of work that you like, even if it's really weird or maybe you don't totally understand how it fits together. I think we've had a lot of really nice surprises where personal work or things that we just were like, who is ever gonna like this? Like people have come back sometimes even years later and been like, that is my favorite project of yours and we've been referencing it for a long time and we'd love for you to make something like that. So you just like never really know what people are gonna respond to. And that surprise can be really really gratifying, especially when it's something that like was totally personal.
So don't overthink the like, this is the purpose of this. Yeah. This is how it will be used. Like,
I think so. Yeah.
Well, or you can, you know, sort of trick yourself in the same way and say the purpose of this is to track the work I want to make. So whatever you need to do, but like definitely putting out work that you feel connected to and that you would like to pursue seems to be a really important thing. You know, people are visual and people are moving really quickly and they want to see something of what they're looking for and what you do. So you have to sort of just put yourself out there.
Yeah.
I guess when you guys are out of ideas, do you have, sorry, I interrupted you.
That's okay.
Yeah. But I was going to say, do you have something that you do to get inspired, or do you have like a trick that you use sometimes? I don't know.
I think it's different for both of us.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think of, I mean, I get excited by discovering new, like, I don't know. I got really excited going to Canal Rubber and finding all this like weird stuff and shapes that would like, we may have spent so much time and effort putting together out of something that like wasn't as helpful to us. And then it's like, wow, this thing already existed and we can like repurpose it and use it. And it's going to like make everything that we're doing look even better and more polished. So maybe there's like, it's the efficiency in that that gets me excited about like, this frees up my time and space to like really focus in on something else.
I like going to look at art.
Yeah.
I find it very inspiring.
Like in museums or galleries?
Or museums. And just try to pay more attention to what I'm like consuming, you know, like watching, I don't know, I feel like there's inspiration in everything. I don't know that
there
I
is.
I mean, I might not always have the best flow of ideas, but I think I always kind of have some ideas just because I'm always translating what I'm consuming, like watching on TV or looking at or reading. I feel like there's, if I let it really touch me or affect me in some way, there's going to be some translation. So I take a lot from life.
Yeah. I feel like we're often just sending things back and forth of various mediums and random places. I think lately a lot of it for me has been more like sets or play stages or musical stages, or even just like things that I see in stores sometimes, like the way a product is displayed or the way
like a visual merchandising kind of
I just like to see how other people make things, and I often am like taking visual notes of that and letting it inform how we can work ourselves.
So are there some artists, designers, or creatives in general that really inspire you off the top of your head, of course, because you're not going to be able to name all of them, but
Well, I think I feel like always Nicole has like way more of art background, and so she pulls people sometimes that I've like often never even heard of, but it's great to look at. I think one person that I always come back to is Alex DeCourt. He is an artist who, how would you even describe it? I feel like he just creates these really beautifully colorful, well-lit, surreal spaces, and it involves often sculpture, collage.
And he works with physical objects as well.
Yeah, he does. But I feel like he just creates this whole immersive experience often that is really inspiring. And I love his color combinations. And I love a lot of his work. I don't know, the other random person that is coming to mind that I think probably has looked at Alex DeCourt also, but his work is just so funny. I don't even know if I'm going to say his name right. Eric Mistretta.
Okay.
I follow him on Instagram.
He's hilarious.
I don't really know what his deal is, but he has a whole series of like fake books.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They're so funny.
I'm not even going to do it justice if I tell you the titles of them, but like his work is just funny. It's like simple and funny.
But it's beautiful
and
too.
Really well
done.
It's
very designed. So it's very clean. So,
but like ridiculous in it.
But it's, it's really, really fun. Mika Rottenberg, I think that's her. I'm probably going to say her name wrong as well. I've loved her work forever. She is a video and installation artist, and she just had an amazing show up at the New Museum. And she deals a lot with economy and it's like labor. And it's just really interesting because it's super surreal in the way that she translates it, and really visually rich, but her ideas are really interesting as well. And I mean, I'm wearing him.
Oh.
Yeah. Matt, I'm going to say his name wrong too.
Matt Lyons.
T-shirt right now, which I absolutely love. And I love his illustration.
I don't know that. Yeah.
It's Matt. L-E-I-N. Let me get it correct for everybody. It's just he's a great, great, great illustrator.
Okay.
And I love the shirt that I'm wearing.
I feel like together we often look at Nadia Lee's
work. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Her video work, mainly just in her, I feel like we're all always like amazed by her prosthetics and like the crazy ways that she alters human form and makes it just like super weird with like one small detail that's like a little bit off. She's a director.
Yeah, she's a director.
Yeah, that's interesting that I think about your work actually doesn't have people in it usually.
No.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Or characters.
I think we're maybe moving a little bit more towards that direction. I think that's sometimes why we are drawn to that work, because we haven't done it yet ourselves in our own way. And so we're looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. So Matt's name, just to, because I really do love his work, is, his last name is L-E-I-N-E-S, Lines.
Okay.
Perhaps.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway. All the people you mentioned, I will put like links to in the show notes. But yeah, the other thing is, like, you guys, I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with her work, but I'm sure you get compared with Jessica Walsh sometimes.
Jessica Walsh is great.
Sometimes there's a similar sensibility to the way she captures an image, I think, that I see in her work as well.
The scale of it often, and how she uses it in her. I think she's doing very well for herself. But
yes.
I think what she really, does really great is she incorporates photography and styling into almost all of her branding work. And she's really good at pairing those two worlds pretty equally, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely with more of maybe a branding edge, I think, than we have had as many opportunities to do.
And the branding for her new studio is just beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Really incorporated a lot, which is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Nicole actually made something for her Ladies Wine Design thing. So they are.
Yeah.
Really?
Friendly. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, thank you so much for talking with me. I'm really happy to have people who are doing different things on the show. So
I was
really excited to talk to you guys, and I really do love your work. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. This has been really wonderful.
Yeah.
Love talking to you.
Thank you.
And that was my conversation with Nicole Licht and Melissa Deckert of Party of One Studio. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did and got a lot out of this conversation. I definitely did. Go show Nicole and Melissa some love on Instagram at Party of One. And do also check out their work. I've included links to everything we talked about in the show notes, and you can find those at illustrationhour.com/partyofone. If you like the show, please consider leaving us a review and rating on iTunes. It really helps. And also check out our weekly newsletter, Art Club. You can find out about Art Club and join at illustrationhour.com/newsletter. Okay, so until next week, remember to simply create. You don't need to make anything for any purpose other than to enjoy yourself. I know it's hard, but try it out.